Welcome now to the midday for Thursday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and the Madison Symphony this weekend, Friday night at 7:30. That's tomorrow night already. Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30, we'll be performing Berlioz's lively Corsair Overture, Copland's Symphony No. 3, and the centerpiece of the concert is the Brahms Double Concerto, featuring my guests, Pinka Zukerman and Amanda Forsyth. And welcome to the midday.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you both. And this is, we couldn't quite put it all together, but you go back at least to 2001 or something like that, coming to Madison and being on this show also the last couple of times around. Always a pleasure to have you. So, about the Brahms double, you've played it how many times?
Oh, we lost track, I guess.
Yesterday, quite a few times.
Just yesterday, quite a few times, yeah. And I was surprised when I was reading earlier today that the Clara Schumann, who of course was one of Brahms' biggest boosters and a very close friend, didn't much care for the concerto. She thought it didn't give the instruments, the solo instruments, quite enough to do. How could that be?
I don't know. It was her opinion.
She didn't have to play it.
No. I think we have plenty to do, especially the cello.
Yeah. We didn't get a concerto for ourselves as a cellist, so we sort of take this as our cello concerto that Brahms wrote.
I would say, well, and you started out, don't you, as a solo instrument?
Very opening is the cello cadenza, and the last movement also opening. The opening theme is cello.
How do you, having been married all these years and having performed together all these years and this work all this time, how do you actually go about even practicing this piece? Do you? Or, I mean,
we keep keeping each other in check, actually, because if you play a piece a lot, you have to be very careful not to just play it in your sleep, sort of thing. So often we're playing something else and backstage he has his dressing room and I have my dressing room, and it could be down the hallway. And people said, how does it that you're both playing together? We play the theme of the second movement, but he's way down the hall and I'm up here. And so, but it's still together. But we do fun things together.
No, you do that. You do. What do they call that? Terrace dynamics kind of thing. that works pretty well then? That's the kind of thing you've been doing when you perform this? It's not like you're at home. And where is home, by the way? Is it Ottawa, New York?
New York, now.
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you practice at home at all?
Yes, I actually have a studio downstairs if I want to make awful noises so he doesn't have to hear it. If I'm learning something new, and so I'll go downstairs to the studio and practice there, and he practices in his room upstairs, and then sometimes I'll come up to practice. We'll practice simultaneously with the door closed, and you can kind of hear each other, even different pieces at the same time. And then
really?
I'll ask him to come out into the living room, and we'll play something together or ask each other's opinions. And what else, honey? I'll yell out, F sharp.
I usually eat something while she's playing, which is
while
nice.
She's playing.
Well, because she just made it, which is wonderful.
That's a nice combination. Food and music have been a great compliment for since day one, I venture to say. You've recorded a fair number of things together, too, in one genre or another, one of which is the Trout, the quintet of Franz Schubert, which is certainly unique among his works. And this is one of your, let's see, Pinkus, you're up to 110 CDs that you've produced now.
Really? Oh.
That's what I'm told. That's right. Okay. You're only five behind Joanne Faletta, so it's time to catch up. But this is one of the more recent, about 10 years ago now. And what do you remember about producing the Trout Quintet?
Well, we played with two wonderful friends of ours. Obviously, Fima Bronfman, I've known since he was 15 and I was 106, and Jethro Marx was a former student. He's principal, has been principal now in Ottawa for quite a few years.
Joel Corrington.
And Joel Corrington is first base. He's phenomenal. He's an icon in Canada. So it was a lot of fun to play. We played in a new, almost finished studio in Montreal, which we all kind of enjoyed doing for the first time.
Actually, my dog was there at the time, my Maltese, and he sat on, he was so good, he sat by my feet when we recorded, and Yefim Bronfman was quite amazed that he never made a noise, because he was used to music. So
he was okay with that. I've heard stories about dogs. In fact, I think it was Dragonetti, the bass player, who had a dog with him on stage, and the dog would very obediently sit through the concert and then leave when he was supposed to. But not to digress too much, Amanda, but you did mention, however, that although this may works with strings and piano for canine discipline, trombones could be a different story.
Yes, my father was a trombonist, and we were just listening now to a trombone concerto, and I'm always reminded in my mind's memory ear of my Dalmatians howling, because when my dad practiced, they either loved it or hated it. But they would go to where he was with the trombone and howl and sort of carry on. I thought it was wonderful as a child, but he took to practicing at the university instead.
Dog-free environment. Well, here's some of the Trout. So that's the way you sounded about 10 years ago or so, playing the scherzo from the Trout Quintet by Schubert, Amanda Forsyth and Pinchas Zukerman and company. And it's always a fun exercise. You're looking particularly pensive, Pinchas, having heard that. Any thoughts?
I'm looking for the trout in the lake, but it's frozen.
That's right. Well, you were all playing scales, at least.
Yeah. I still do. Every day.
I was going to ask that question.
You don't have to. It's okay. I just answered
just thank
it.
Thank you. Are there any other questions you'd like to answer before I ask them?
And it's usually not so good.
Does that hold for you, too, Amanda? You practice the basics?
I try. I think my early teaching was not as...
rigorous,
really structured, mm-hmm. as Pinchas's his method of teaching now is really the old school of absolute, the Galamian method, and it's so fantastic, and I wish I'd had it.
We hear about that. What is that Galamian method?
It's separating the brain.
That sounds painful.
That is very painful and forever. he took the practical side, which is the right side, meaning the Boehm. And that's really where it's at, because without the sound, there's nothing. See, Amanda was born with such a wonderful sound. Nobody had to really tell her how to do it. And she's learned over the years to somehow use that in every possible way, in new music, old music, baroque music, etc. So these are things that I think when you do that, the 18, 20, 22-year-old understands for the future what they have to do. It takes a bit of time because the brain is the smallest computer and the slowest computer we have today. And there's very little you can delete, but if you spend a lot of time, you can delete a lot.
Well, that raises an interesting question, because you have, I'm going to guess, something like, what, 200 concertos in your...
200?
No.
Yeah. No.
No?
I have one good one. That's it.
Should I ask which?
No.
But a lot, you have a lot of music in there, and
yeah.
And you're steeped in music, both of you, all the time. What happens if you get away from music and
you don't.
Relative silence? You
never
you just
do.
Don't.
There's no silence.
No, there's no real silence.
And sometimes he'll be, if I'm totally mumbling here, thinking my brain, if I'm at his concert and whatever he played last, or whatever I heard him practice last, or whatever I practiced last, it's still in my brain going, and what they call it, earworms,
yes,
right?
That's right, yes.
It's very annoying. And certain pieces really, especially rhythmic pieces that I'm playing at the time, I'm thinking, am I asleep? Am I awake? Am I practicing in my sleep? I do a lot of practicing in my sleep. But sometimes I'm practicing the wrong thing, and I'm saying to myself, Amanda,
really?
Don't practice that concerto. You're playing this tomorrow. And then suddenly his piece will come into my brain. So it's, as you say, we're seeped in music. It's all in there.
Well, at least it's not like the theme from Jeopardy or something that's stuck in there.
No. It used to be dum bum 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 ba dum ba dum ba dum ba dum boop boop boop. That's a Mario Brothers
song.
Sounds
like the Swingle Singers or somebody.
Oh, thank you.
How, are they still alive?
They couldn't be.
No.
No, they recorded. Be, yeah. We're talking about 60 years ago.
Nor are the Ray Conniff Singers alive.
Well, the whole bunch of them at least have gone into selling
Elvis
real estate.
Elvis is still around, isn't he?
He's at Kmart.
Yes.
He's at Taco Bell, isn't it?
No, he was just seen leaving Kmart.
From week to week. Well, now, speaking of itinerants or things like that, have you ever had the experience... Well, you'd have to actually seek it out, I suppose. We hear about other well-known performers who will play in a subway or something like that just to see
how people... Oh, I did that experiment with quite a few.
Yeah, have you done that?
No, I haven't. Uh-huh. Cellos, you know, I don't want to take my cello out in there.
Not into the subway, no. Yeah.
Funny, they don't make a lot of money.
No.
They give it up.
Their hat isn't big enough, I guess, for that. But it's an interesting experiment, though. So occasionally you'll hear that one or two people... Mm-hmm. Oh,
there was a fellow in New York called Richard Webster, I think, or Richard Wexler, or something like that, in 65. He stood out on 57th Street and 5th Avenue with his violin case open. Mind you, it was springtime. He made 500 bucks that day.
500?
Yep, first day. And so everybody thought, I'll make money.
Oh, and everybody else thought they could try it. And, varying.
Richard Wexler, I think his name was, yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with talent, but it also has to do with location, location, location,
yes,
as they say. Now, of course, you're in Madison to play the Brahms Double Concerto, and you have recorded it, right?
Yes.
Have you?
Yes.
Haven't you? Unfortunately, we don't have that. We'll have to pass the hat to get a copy of that, but we do have, going all the way back to the 90s, early 90s.
Is that really so far away?
I'm afraid so.
Oh, dear.
30 years ago.
Wow. We do have this recording of the Brahms double.
Who's the cellist?
The cellist is Lynn Harrell.
Okay, I approve. I'm Amanda Forsyth, and I approve this cellist.
You've been seeing those ads again, haven't you? Pinchas Zukerman is the violinist, and Zubin Mehta leads the New York Philharmonic, and... this is the finale from that double concerto of Brahms. The grand finale of the double concerto, the concerto for violin and cello and orchestra in A minor by Johannes Brahms, his last orchestral work from 1887. The violinist was Pinchas Zukerman, the cellist was Lynn Harrell, and Zubin Mehta led the New York Philharmonic. And I want to hear more about that recording and also about your work with, among others, Jack Benny. And of course, we'll get to our quiz question too after this on WPR. So now, back to my guests today, Pinchas Zukerman and Amanda Forsyth, violin and cello, respectively, husband and wife in all ways, and they're going to be performing the Brahms Double Concerto with the Madison Symphony this weekend. Now, we just heard that recording back from 1990 or so, the Brahms Double that you did, Pinchas, and these things, you know, when we listen to the CD... It just seems, they did it in one take, and they put it on a CD, and we're listening to it. But an easy trap to fall into. Not so easy, you're saying.
Well, it was a complicated setup because we had Dolby and digital at the same time. It was an experiment to do both at the same time, and hence we had many microphones set up. The actual recording in the studio, so to speak, in Philharmonic Hall, was very tough at the time. Philharmonic Hall was not conducive to recording, even though there were quite a few recordings that came out of that hall. But because of Dolby and digital, we had very dry takes, dry meaning no sound, really. And that was very difficult to balance. So we had to finally decide on one system or the other. which took a couple of hours until we set up all the microphones properly, etc. It was not an easy couple of days.
He had a young producer?
No, he was a... No, Andy Kasdan, he was there for quite a while. He, Tom Frost, lots of different people were...
Oh, Thomas Frost, sure, yeah.
He was the same age.
Same age, but I guess there were some... occasionally with the performer and producer, there's some disagreements as to how this thing should finally sound.
Well, if you think of Dolby as black and white and digital as multicolored, and so the setup has to be totally different. I'm sure they had the same problems in Hollywood with all the different cameras and things that came in.
Sure, yeah. The technology constantly changing is...
We learned as we went along.
don't we all? This is a relatively simple recording, I'm guessing, then, but from about the same time, we really should update our Pinchas Zukerman, Amanda Forsyth collection here, because I'm sure you've done a few CDs in the last 10 years or so. This is two of the Beethoven, well, the Beethoven Violin Concerto and also his Violin Sonata number 10, from which we'll hear the second movement, the Adagio Espressivo. And this is the last of the Beethoven violin sonatas, isn't it?
It is the last, Opus 96.
And do you think it's any kind of a departure from the other nine?
Oh, I don't know. I think he departed way before that. With the Eroica Symphony. No, yeah. It was a growing pattern that became quite unusual in that particular format. I think the sixth sonata, the A major, may be the greatest one in some ways.
And your pianist for this occasion is Mark Nekrug.
30 years.
Long collaboration.
Yeah, many dinners.
Here we go. And we'll leave it at that for that particular movement of the Beethoven Violin Sonata number 10 in G, featuring Pinchas Zukerman and Mark Nekrug back around 1992, and more from my guests, Pinchas Zukerman and Amanda Forsyth. And I'll repeat our 12:30 quiz question, too, after this on WPR. All right, now I'm very curious about your work with another violinist, Pinchas Zukerman. It's a combination that you rarely have ever see on a marquee or a CD, and that would be the combination of Pinchas Zukerman and Jack Benny. but there was no, such a performance.
Well, there were a few, but one of the things that was not actually a performance, I did play a concert, and as I was walking off backstage in Los Angeles, Zubin and I walked off the stage, there was Jack standing there. He had just come from Las Vegas. And Typico said, "I just wanted to hear a little bit of your sound," he said. And as I turned around, he said, "Wait a minute." I said, "Give me the fiddle." So I thought he wanted to hold it. And he went out and did his walk, you know, that wonderful walk. Yeah. Well, the place went berserk.
I bet they did.
And then he came back and he shook his hand at the concert master. It was totally ad-lib. He was an amazing guy. He used to once in a while phone me when I had just arrived in Los Angeles unpacking, and he said, "I'm coming over." I said, "Wait, I just came." He said, "I just want to hear one note."
Is that all you gave him?
No. And then he would take me to dinner, and he had to pay, you know. Because if he didn't pay, the waiters would say, "See, he's really cheap."
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, he had built up such a character, such a persona over his many years in vaudeville and then, of course, on radio and television and in films.
Rochester.
Yeah.
Well, he really did some wonderful things for music. Extraordinary.
Really?
Yeah. He played very badly.
That's what I hear in his autobiography. It was Isaac Stern or somebody that he played a little ensemble piece with, and Jack was pretty happy about it, but in the commentary later, no, he was really not very good. But what did he do for music other than what he did to music?
Well, he just raised an enormous amount of money for all of us.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. And especially for Israel, a tremendous amount. Isaac played with him. I played a couple of benefits in New York with Jack at the old Americana Hotel. It was really wonderful.
You just had to know what to expect. Well, Amanda, your father was composer Malcolm Forsythe, and he did write. Did he write this concerto for you?
Oh, yes.
Cello concerto, which goes by the name of Elektra Rising. What does that mean?
Well, there's several ways of thinking of it. We subsequently made an album of his cello and piano music, which we called Soaring with Agamemnon. So he did have a fascination for Greek mythology, but has nothing to do with actually killing my mother.
I'm happy to hear
that.
Well,
they were divorced. and also a movie was made called, what was it? Amanda Rising. So, yeah, it all sort of goes together. He was a very big scholar, actually, of Greek literature and all kinds of literature, even though he's a trombonist, and we came from South Africa to immigrate to Canada when I was very young. And he's a very smart man, my dad. Fantastic cello concerto. He wrote me Elektra Rising, and it was, as a very sort of young professional, he wrote it for me. And it's kind of an autobiographical, programmatic piece where I think you're going to play the first movement entitled Cadenza.
That's, yeah, the movements are a little harder to tell, but, oh, sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so the opening movement is sort of early life and then the struggle or things like this. And he had it all. It's kind of between us, I suppose.
So, yeah, we won't have time for absolutely all of it, but we'll get the idea. And this is featuring also the Edmonton Symphony.
Yeah, where I grew up, in Edmonton, Alberta.
And the conductor is?
Mario Bernardi.
Oh, actually, this is the version we have.
Oh, it's Novak.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Gregor's Novak.
Also conducted Edmonton Symphony.
So we'll hear some of that opening from Elektra Rising featuring Amanda Forsyth. From the first movement called Cadenza of Elektra Rising for cello and chamber orchestra by the Canadian composer Malcolm Forsythe. And Amanda Forsythe, his daughter, was the soloist with the Edmonton Symphony and has also been my guest today with husband Pinchas Zuckerman. They will be performing the Brahms Double Violin Concerto with the Madison Symphony tomorrow night and Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Is that good? That's all good? You were looking quizzical, Pinchas.
That sounds right.
Okay. You weren't planning to play that? You were thinking of playing
something?
No, but
there is a cello in there,
except
by the way.
Except it's violin and cello, not
violin.
Violin
and cello, not just violin.
But
we don't mean to correct you.
I have no responsibility for anything I say live. Thank you for the correction. Well, a pleasure having you with us today, Pinchas Zuckerman.
Thanks for having us.
And Amanda Forsythe.